Hello, Ray Bohax here, your host, the Hot Rod Farmer, and welcome to the Idle Chatter Road Test Podcast Series. And today we are going to be getting to know a little bit better the 2020 Chevrolet Silverado Crew Cab 4-Wheel Drive, and that is the subject of our road test. So the vehicle that was supplied to the Farm Machinery Digest by General Motors was a Silverado High Country, and that is a top-of-the-line model, the trim package, that is meant to compete internally through General Motors with the GMC Denali. It's a little bit below the Denali as far as the trim level is concerned, but it's probably not a trim package that most farmers would buy. And the same thing with the Denali package. I mean, some people may decide to opt for that, but it is a higher-end trim package, a little bit more money than a base Silverado. But we are going to look at that truck. Whenever I road test a truck, I am not concerned with the trim package, because the trim package does not make the vehicle. So we are going to road test, and I'm going to give you my review of this Silverado as a Chevy Silverado, not a High Country. So everything, all the amenities that were in the truck, the power moonroof, the heated leather seats, and all the other whiz-bang stuff, I am not going to discuss. I'm going to discuss this truck as a work truck for a farm or for a ranch. And then if you decide to opt for that package, so be it. It's not going to negate from the truck's ability to do work. So now, you know, one of the things, hey, what can you say bad about a Chevy Silverado? I don't care what brand loyalty you have, whether you're a GM guy, a Ram guy, or a Ford guy. I mean, the Silverado is definitely a serious player, and it's a very tight field out there within the pickup truck community, because they all can, carry a load. But, the Silverado is a truck that has been around for quite some time, obviously in the C10 form years back. And what my concern was, and one of the reasons why I wanted to do this test, was that the there's a lot of people who are Chevy guys out there, and there's people that are other brand guys that may want to be a Chevy guy. So I thought it was important for me to bring to you an evaluation of this truck as a farm truck, as a work truck, as a ranch truck. And the the Silverado, over the years, as with every domestic pickup truck, has slightly changed its focus. I mean, remember Chevy used to do the ads like a rock, and there was all the ad and strong, and I forgot what all the other ad campaigns were over the years. But, back then when you looked at an ad for a pickup truck, be it on television, radio, and print, it spoke about its attributes to do work. So with the 2019, General Motors redesigned the Chevy Silverado completely, complete redesign. It wasn't what we call in the industry a freshen, where they changed the grill or changed some of the sheet metal. It was a redesign, and along with its twin, the GMC Sierra, and what I wanted to really see was, is it still like a rock? Does that still apply? Or did the expansion of the pickup truck market into the personal use vehicle soften the Silverado? Is it the old Chevy C10 that your grandfather had, that then when he got done, ran it for 20 or 30 years, and it sat behind the barn and it still used it in the field? So, hey, does this new Chevy stand up to that reputation, or did it get soft and flabby and become a city guy's truck? So we are going to see. So buckle your seatbelts, hold on, and I am going to tell you about this Silverado. Now, as I said a second back, for the 2019 model year, our truck was a 2020. The Silverado was completely redesigned, and it's a very dynamic market, and it's a market that's very competitive. So no pickup truck manufacturer could sit on its laurels too long, and they need, because the bar is constantly being raised with competitive models. So the parts of the truck that are not new were highly massaged and tweaked, and to raise the bar in performance against that competition. But the question needed to be asked, as I was saying, is that will this updated Silverado still function as a farm or ranch truck, or did its focus completely change with this redesign to become a city slicker? All right, so hey, we're going to see. But our test vehicle was a beautiful, beautiful color. It was called Havana Brown Metallic, and it had jet black leather upholstery. The picture that I am using in this podcast, on the page of my website where this podcast is listed, is a promo shot from General Motors, because when I had the Silverado, it was raining and snowing. It was in May, but it was raining and snow, it was snowing. We had about 2 inches of snow and ice, and that was not prime weather to take pictures of a truck. So General Motors gave me an image from their press fleet. So, but still, it's the same truck, makes no difference. It's just a different color, and so it's representative of what I tested. So now, let's get to the meat and potatoes with this truck. So let's start with the mechanicals. The test truck that I had was fitted with the 5.3-liter Ecotec 3 V8 and the Hydromatic 10R80 10-speed automatic transmission. Now, there's an optional larger V8, a 6.2-liter V8. And, you know, for those who were doing the math, what I always like to say is that a good rule of thumb is that a liter, as far as an engine displacement is concerned, for quick math, is around 60 cubic inches. And when I did the bore and stroke that General Motors supplied to me, the information, did the math of the bore and stroke, this engine worked out to be a little bit more than 325 cubic inches. So by years ago standards, that was small. But by today's standards, it's not that small because of the technology and advancements in that have been incorporated into engines. So it's just like they say, hey, you know, 70 is the new 50. Well, a 300 cubic inch engine is the new 400 cubic inch engine. So it's something that the technology has made the engine so much more powerful and efficient. But you know what really, really excited me about getting into this truck was not only that it was new, but I was really, really revved up, no pun intended, about the drivetrain, because this 5.3-liter Ecotec 3 engine and the 10-speed Hydromatic is a really high-tech and very, very refined drivetrain in theory, and I wanted to see if it really was. Now, both engines, what I mean is that the 5.3 Ecotec 3 that I had in a test vehicle or the 6.2 optional 6.2 are fitted with the new GM Dynamic Fuel Management. You know, everything today is an acronym. So it's called DFM for the abbreviation for Dynamic Fuel Management. And, you know, a lot of people think that this is just this, a rebadged version of the old system that General Motors had to kill cylinders. But it is not. And actually, to tell you the truth, a little bit of history here is that the first production engine that was able to negate cylinders was the old 1981 Cadillac V864. Because based upon load on the engine, it could go from 8 cylinders to 6 cylinders to four cylinders. But this dynamic fuel management, dynamic fuel management is a little bit more advanced than that. This system, the DFM, allows the number of cylinders operating, right, to be varied based on engine load, and it accomplishes this by disabling the valves via the valve lifter. And in discussions with General Motors, this is what I found out. The cylinder deactivation technology enables the engine to operate in 17 different cylinder patterns to optimize power and efficiency. So there's 17 different patterns of which cylinder is going to fire, when it's going to fire, how it's going to fire, versus the old system of which they called active fuel management, which some of you may have been familiar with and had engines with that. And that came about in 2005. So the active fuel management system was not as advanced as this. Dynamic fuel management is really, to tell you the truth, is a evolutionary progression of that technology. And that's according to Mr. Jordan Lee, who is the small block chief engineer. So it's General Motors, small block Chevrolet, small block, they don't call it Chevrolet anymore, General Motors chief engineer. But with the dynamic fuel management, the DFM enables only the cylinders needed to deliver the power that you want, Mr. Lee said. And it's he said, and he claimed it's going to be seamless, delivering the best balance of power and fuel economy. Now, to those who have older Chevy trucks, 2005 up into this, that had active fuel management, AFM, right? These acronyms get confusing. Is that that system only alternated between 8 cylinders and 4 cylinders? So what the dynamic range does, it changes all the amount of cylinders and it changes when they fire. So whereas the DFM features 17 cylinder patterns, cylinder firing patterns out of an 8 cylinder engine. So that higher authority, that higher ability to do more mixes the cylinder patterns that constantly optimize efficiency and power delivery at all speeds. All right, so this is what they tell us, right? Let's see what happens when we put this truck to a test. But according to General Motors, and I'm first giving you what was told to me through General Motors, that they have an industry standard test schedule. And schedule means a protocol for tests. It's an engineering term for that, you know, a test. So you could have a test in your field and say, well, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to have a test plot over here. So, and I'm going to put the corn in at 50,000 seeds per acre. So that's your protocol, it's your test. So what they said is that a Silverado in two-wheel drive with the 5.3 and the DFM, which the engine I had, the Ecotec 3, and operated with fewer than 8 active cylinders more than 60% of the time, 9% more than a comparably equipped outgoing model, according to GM. This is what they're telling me with the active fuel management. So to recap, DFM is the new system on this truck, 2019 and newer, is able to have 17 different cylinder firing patterns. The old system was called AFM, active fuel management, and only alternated between 4 cylinders and 8 cylinders. So now to do this, to accomplish this, you know, is there's a lot of technology that is involved in making this happen. And the DFM is powered by, it's a very sophisticated controller, engine controller. Sometimes people will call them a PCM, powertrain control module. And as an aside to this, if it has the transmission controller in it and the engine, they call it a PCM, which most modern systems have. They have it integrated into one because they constantly work together. So it's easier to have internal integration instead of two separate controllers. And it continuously monitors every movement of the accelerator pedal. So, and then what it needs to do to make this decision, because any controller makes a decision. I don't care what's a controller on the Chevy truck, a controller on your grain bin, a controller on your combine, a controller on your tractor's auto steer, right? It has to run it has very, very advanced math in it. And it's a complex sequence of different calculations to determine how many cylinders are required to meet the driver's request for torque. Now, as an engineer, you look at torque, you really don't look at horsepower. We buy horsepower, but we pull a load, we drive torque. That's something in the engineering community. We always say people buy horsepower. Even when it comes to a tractor, you buy horsepower. I got the Case Steiger 600, but you're really buying torque. You're not buying horsepower. But that's a discussion for my Idle Chatter podcast. And I actually did a show on that. But, so, and you know, what's really mind-boggling is that this processor, that runs the engine in this new Chevy truck, it can make this determination 80 times per second. So it's this high-speed computer that's looking at the engine load, the driving conditions, the accelerator pump, it's a carburetor, right? And making these decisions 80 times per second. So that is crazy fast. And then what happens is that there's an electromechanical system. So electromechanical means that it's part mechanical and part electronic. And that deactivates and then reactivates all 16 of the engine's hydraulic valve lifters. And that's how it controls the valve actuation. So to kill a cylinder, it's going to control the valve actuation, because this is a gasoline direct injection engine, and it's a coil on plug engine that the controller could act, could also shut the fuel off, because what good is having it fueled, right? Having it's not going to save anything there, and then you're going to have the problem of getting rid of that raw fuel. So it shuts the fuel off and shuts the ignition off. So what's going to happen is that the valve lifter actually is what's killing the cylinder, negating the cylinder, all right? But then we're also shutting the fuel off and the spark to it. So the system, how it works in very simplistic terms for a podcast, because you could spend a day going over this, the mechanics of the system in the classroom, but the system uses solenoids and to deliver oil pressure to control ports in the valve lifters, which activate and deactivate the lifter. They have what's called a latching mechanism on the lifter, on the valve lifter, for it to latch and for the piston inside the hydraulic valve lifter to latch and connect. So when the PCM determines that a cylinder should be deactivated, the two-piece valve lifter effectively collapses onto itself. And that allows it from not opening the valve. So the piston plunger drops down because it collapses, because I would assume they're taking the oil away from that. All right. So when the cylinder is reactivated, so it's, hey, we need that cylinder now, right? The solenoid sends an oil pressure signal to control the ports on the lifters. The latching mechanism then unlatches and restores normal function, and it allows the valves to open and close normally. So also what General Motors told us is that and this is a quote from them, the increased variability of dynamic fuel management means that the engine will operate more often with a reduced number of cylinders, which saves fuel across the board. And that is from Mr. Lee, the chief engineer. But he also added, better yet, the transitions are transparent because the system is torque-based. And you've always got the satisfying feel of power on demand that comes from a Chevy's Generation 5 small block V8 engines, close quote. So that's what he quoted on the technology in this engine. Now, all right, getting back to assigning some numbers to this, the 5.3 V8 with the DFM, of course they have a 5.3 without the DFM. So we had the optional 5.3 with the DFM. Is SAE certified, at Society of Automotive Engineers certified, at 355 horsepower and 383 pounds-feet of torque. And as I said before, it's gasoline direct injected. If you went for the optional 6.2 with the DFM, and the General Motors says it's the most significant and most potent gas V8 engine in the segment, and I would have to add that is, I'm not denying that's not true, but I think now with the new Ford 7.3 that may not be true. But up until this particular point, it is true. And it's SAE certified at 420 horsepower and 460 pounds-feet of torque. So that's the optional 6.2, which we did not have. But, you know, an engine is great by itself, but it also needs to be mated to a transmission. And what our truck had was the new Hydromatic. And it's a 10-speed Hydromatic transmission. And that features many, even between 2019 and 2020, they enhanced it even more. And it features the improved shift quality, they say, and a new centrifugal pendulum absorber torque converter. The design of that pendulum and the torque converter is meant to reduce vibrations to improve smoothness, and particularly during cylinder deactivation events. You know, you have to be very careful, is that when you start to deactivate cylinders on the V8 engine, all right, is that you could actually put a harmonic or a shuttering in through the drivetrain. So this pendulum-style torque converter absorbs a lot of that, and in theory is supposed to mask it. Now, both engines, either the 5.3 or the 6.2, are built in the GM Tonawanda engine plant in Buffalo, New York. And anybody who's a hot rodder, you're a hot rod or hot rod farmer, that engine plant has a very storied history of building some wonderful, wonderful engines over the years. I believe that plant came online in the 50s or 60s, but at least in the 60s, I would say. But if you're an old big block Chevy guy, all right, and you'd see on the big block, on the old big block Chevys, in a Corvette, Chevelle, what have you, and they may have actually put that on a pickup truck also. They used to have this really cool decal years ago that said Tonawanda Forging, Buffalo, New York, built the Tonawanda Forging. They should really bring that back, but it was a Tonawanda-built engine, and to anybody who is a Chevy guy or just a hot rod guy, that brings a lot of street credentials to the table to have that little Tonawanda, the Tonawanda engine in there, and very, very impressive. It's nice to be able to know that a plant has such history. And also, before we get into some other stuff about the truck, is that some little loose ends here, is that our truck that I had that was Tesla Hour, meaning the Farm Machinery Digest, was built at the award-winning, and it's an award-winning assembly plant in Roanoke, Indiana. And that is in the heart of the Corn Belt, so it's a Corn Belt built truck. And Roanoke really is outside of Fort Wayne. So I've ridden by that plant many, 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 many times. It's a beautiful facility on the outside. Did not have the opportunity ever to go inside and tour it, but it is a beautiful facility, and I believe it works on a lot of solar power. But it is a award winning facility, and I'll tell you one thing. The build quality on my Silverado test vehicle was phenomenal. Excellent, excellent, excellent build quality. Tight body lines, tight fit and finish, the panels lined up. I mean, interior panels, exterior panels, paint on it was beautiful. It's definitely, it truly is a well-built vehicle as far as its assembly and the tightness of its assembly is concerned. So kudos to those guys and a lot of farmers working that plant. And that's why that truck is built so well. But it's right over there in the heart of the heart of the Eastern Corn Belt, right, Indiana. So now also to round things up, so you have the mechanical background of this truck. The rear axle ratio in the test truck that I had was a 3.23:1, and it included a automatic locking design, and the transfer case was the GM Auto Track with two speeds. It had a two-speed Auto Track transfer case, and it had a 3.23:1. Rear axle ratio. And I was also excited, you know, to see that the truck came standard with a 170 amp alternator as part of that engine package, and it had the new variable volume, variable pressure oiling system. And you know, getting back to the alternator for a second, it had that smart charging system, and that is, it's infinitely control, and it's controlled by the engine processor. So it's not just an old fashioned voltage regulator. You're going down the road and you see the voltage drop and come back up. But what I was really excited to see is that with the 170 amp alternator, and a lot of people don't give this thought on today's vehicles, is that the today's vehicles are so electricity hungry. I mean, the high pressure gasoline direct injection, high pressure fuel injection, all of these solenoids open and close the valves, on this DFM system, all the electronics inside the vehicle, inside the passenger compartment, the OnStar system, just everything is running off of electrons, and it's very important for you to keep that charging system voltage and the ability to produce amperage very high for that all to work well. So a 170 amp alternator, which would have been something that you would not have seen years ago on grandpa's pickup truck, the old Delcatron alternators when they came out with 1971, I think, or 1973, between 71 and 73, I think 73 was the system integrated, the 10SI with the internal voltage regulator system. It's SI back then stood for system integrated internal voltage regulator, which set the whole industry on its ear when Delco came out with that in the early 70s. But that was like a 35 amp alternator. So you would need four of these, or almost five of these, to make up what this one alternator does. And that's also important because if you're taking this truck and you're idling it, if you're out there checking cattle, you're running something off of it. Now, what was interesting is, since I'm talking about the alternator, is that the truck had 110-volt receptacles in the bed. So that, makes it So if you needed to run something, you needed to run a little saw or drill or what have you out in the field, that you could run it off of that. So this all comes into this 170 amp alternator package, which is standard in this particular engine. And I believe that the other, that the that all of them have that same alternator, but I may be wrong because the literature was not clear. And then also to round that out, it had the GM Stabilitrack system, which is a trailer sway control and a hill start assist program. So there's a lot of technology there, but the thing is that, you know, this all sounds great on paper, right? You know, we have the dynamic fuel management. We could kill, we have 17 different cylinder firings. We've got a 10-speed transmission. We've got a 170-amp alternator. And, you know, to me, that's wonderful. That's like coming into a job with a nice suit and tie and saying, here's my college diploma. Here's what I accomplished. I was this, this, and that in school. That's fine. That gets you the interview. Now that you got the job, let's see what it does. And that's what I want to see with this Chevy. Looked fantastic on paper, great on paper. But, you know, how did this truck drive? How is this truck going to work for you on a farm or a ranch? So what I did is I ended up picking up the truck at FMI, which is the press, like what we call it, press vehicle or whatever agency that handles General Motors vehicles. And it's about 60 miles from our farm, right near New York City, 60, 65 miles. And I picked up the truck there. You know, when I jumped in it and I took it back to the farm, and what I had planned is really work in this Chevy. And what I wanted, what I was going to do with it is that early the next morning, I was going to, well, that evening, I was going to load a 207, an empty 275-gallon tote IBC carry into the bed of that truck, and I was going to go down to, and the Chevy was going to be tasked, its job was going to be to go down to Maryland to my agro liquid dealer, which is the mill in Maryland. They have three locations, and the one I go to is, I guess, the closest to Pennsylvania. But anyway, the was going to go down there, and it was going to pick up both my planter and my broadcast fertility programs. So I was going to, this truck was going to have go back and forth, and what I was going to do was I was going to go 2 days back and forth in a row, because I can't put two 275-gallon totes in the back of the truck. So I was going to go down on Friday, the day after I got it. I got it Thursday evening, and I was going to leave early in the morning, had the tote loaded up, and I really had no seat time in this truck other than coming the 60 miles from the press office to the farm. Loaded up the tote, secured it, got everything ready, took care of the animals here, did everything I had to do on the farm to leave at 5 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock the next morning to go down to Maryland. Now, what I was going to do was, that was a Friday morning, and then Saturday, I was going to come back up Friday afternoon, evening. I was going to pump off the load from that tote, so this way I could leave that tote secured, and then I was going to go the next day, and I was going to pick up the other load of fertilizer. And one trip was going to be the fertilizer I was going to broadcast, the agro liquid mixture I was going to broadcast, and then the second trip the next day was going to be my planter fertilizer, or vice versa, depending upon how we ended up loading it. It was irrelevant, but the truck was going to be make two trips, back-to-back round trip to Maryland, to the mill, my agro liquid dealer, and back. So that meant on in 2 days, Friday, Saturday, I would put about 1,100 miles on this truck. Then 50% of that time, it would be loaded with a 275-gallon tote with 265 gallons of liquid fertilizer. And so it was going to be a great test for the abilities to see whether this Silverado became a flabby city slicker or whether she could really work on the farm. So what I did notice right away, and you know, this is current with all pickup trucks, is that, you know, this is the new body, right? And but not just the new body, the previous one was the same, but the, you know, as I said, I'm repeating it with all current pickup trucks, is that the ride height makes loading anything into the bed or a bulky or heavy item much more complicated than I feel it needs to be. So I had a heck of a time getting that tote, that empty tote, into the back of that Silverado, only because the truck sits so high. Now, granted, it was a 4x4, but it was a crew cab. It wasn't jacked up, all right? But all you look at all these new pickups today, the ride height is so high, it gives you no more under vehicle clearance because the differential on the transmission are there. So the height of the body over the frame, all right? So if you look over at the top of the tire to the wheel well, that's where the height is. It's like a young guy jacking up a pickup truck, right? So the thing is that they make them so high, and I had a heck of a time getting that tote by myself into the back of the truck. Now, to contrast that, all right, I could put a tote in my old Ford Ranger, 2002 Ford Ranger, very easily by myself. And all I do is I drag the tote to the tailgate, I pick up the front of the tote towards the tailgate, I left it on the tailgate, get behind it, and I could pick it up and then push it right in the Ranger. Well, on the Silverado, I could do that, but because of the height of the truck, is that I could not get enough. It was a real balancing act to get enough of the tote empty onto the edge of the tailgate and pick up and push it on. To me, it's a non-event with my old Ranger, but it's a task that really, I did it by myself, but really requires two people with a newer pickup truck, not just the Silverado. They're all that way. So that's something I think that all of the people, all of the car companies should look at and say, why are we doing this? This is a work truck. It's a farm truck. I don't need to lift that. And in the same token, if, you know, in my old Ranger, I could put something in the bed and just reach right over and get it. On these newer trucks, the truck is up so high and the side of the bed is so high, it carries no more. But I'm 5'10" and I can't reach down to get something if I dropped a screwdriver or something in there. I have to get something to stand on. So, hey, enough about that. Got on my high horse, but I didn't like that aspect of it. But on the plus side, all right, the Silverado, Chevy really did their homework, is fitted with 12 fixed tie downs. And the truck I had the factory Durabed spray-in liner. So with those 12 tie downs and with the Durabed liner, these totes or anything you put back there, I mean, it's not moving around. And I personally cannot see how there would be any load that you would put in this truck that you could not be appropriately secured efficiently and quickly with that abundance of tie downs. There's tie downs all over the bed of the truck, and I love that. Kudos to GM for that. All right, now mind you, I didn't get in the truck yet and go on the road to Maryland. So the body redesign is subjective. You know, some people like it, some people don't. I like the square cut front. I like the blunt front end that is on this 2020, 2019 and 2020 Chevy. I like the way it looks. I think it wears it well. Not that I didn't like the previous version, but I think it wears it well. It's a little bit different, all right? Different than the other one. But what I didn't like about it, and I noticed this right away when I was pulling out of the parking lot when I picked up the truck at the press office, that it does not, even though I may like the way it looks, I found it does not offer a defined point to where the truck body ends, and this makes it more difficult until you get used to it. So you tend to look out over the horizon instead of the relation of the vehicle to an obstacle. And you know, it, once you get used to it, it's fine, but the thing is, if you were trying to pull into a tight corner, into a barn, or pull up to a piece of equipment, let's say you needed to jump start something or do whatever, is that you really need two people to tell you where it ends, because you really can't tell where it ends. And that's for the front and the back of the truck. So as far as its visibility to go down the road is fine, no denying that, no trouble with that whatsoever. But if you needed to get into a tight jam and move it around or sneak into a tight area, it takes a little bit of guessing and jumping in at a truck to really see how you are, because with that body design, you really can't tell where the truck ends and where it starts. But, you know, our farm is 1 mile from I-80, and my route was going to be, I was going to take I-80 west into Pennsylvania. We're 19 miles from the Pennsylvania border, and then I was going to eventually pick up I-81, and that goes through the mountains of Pennsylvania, and then eventually get into I-83. And, you know, though those mountains in Pennsylvania, they're not the Rocky Mountains, not Colorado, I-81 offers some pretty steep and longer grades. And long grades is usually, a long grades is when you usually have an engine kind of start to hang its tongue out. If you have a short grade that's up quick and then down quick or flattens out, it's not as much as that long grade. And I-81 through that section of Pennsylvania is noticed for that. That's, you know, four-way flashes with a semi 35, 40 mile an hour country in the right lane. So I felt that I'm really going to be able to give this, you know, this, hey, what Mr. Lee said about this new drivetrain. Let's see what it could do, right? Because once I put those totes in there, it's going to be have a pretty good load for a half ton pickup truck, and we're going to see how it handles it. But going down to Maryland, it handled it very, very well, and I'm going to elaborate on that probably in another second or two. But you know, once I got on the highway, it did not take me long to recognize the excellence, and I'm using that word, excellence, that GM achieved in moving air over the Silverado's body. And the truck is extremely quiet, and even it had big towing style mirrors on it, and it's basically has no wind noise. And you know, when you throw a large mirror out in the door of a pickup truck or anything else, it really screws with, pardon my language, with the aerodynamics and with the wind. And the thing is that usually you have, now wind noise is not meant to be confused with a wind leak. A wind leak on a vehicle is a seal that is being violated, and the air is whistling and coming in. Wind noise is something like you hear in the wind, you hear a flag whipping, all right? So you could hear the sound of a flag, or you hear a tree moving and creaking in the wind. So wind noise is different. And this truck was really devoid of any wind noise. And it was so quiet on the highway early that morning when I went out. Not that it makes a difference, it was a morning, but I really paid attention, is that, you know, I stopped at the first rest area. And I wanted to, because I really didn't study the body too much. I knew I was going to have the truck for a week, and I needed to get ready to go down to pick up the fertilizer. So I studied the body, and I'll tell you one thing. If you look at that body, you don't have to be an aerodynamics engineer, but if you look at that body, it becomes very, very apparent. It's like a picket fence stand of corn, all right? It becomes very, very apparent that the silence that I was enjoying, and anybody who drives or rides in the Silverado is going to enjoy, all right, was an extreme, extreme attention to detail, all right, and to reduce the what they call the coefficient of drag. I'll tell you one thing. I'm not an aerodynamics engineer, but I have an engineering background as far as engines and calibration is concerned. This thing spent a zillion hours in the wind tunnel, and it shows. They did not waste their time. So then again, kudos to Chevrolet and General Motors for that, because they had some great people working on the aerodynamics of that truck. Now, you know, and especially when you think of that blunt nose that I liked on it. But if you study that body, and you study, next time you see one, if you're at a dealership, you see one in the parking lot, new 2019 or 2020 or 2021, now, not yet, but in another couple of months, is you'll see all, years ago we used to think that they used to call character lines. They're not character lines. The top of the roof goes off like almost like a little spoiler. Same thing with the tailgate. There's just a lot of aerodynamic tweaks. I mean, active grill shutters, we won't even get into that. But there's a lot of aerodynamic tweaks on that body. And those tweaks are not only going to pay dividends in wind noise, but as you'll see as this road test goes on, it paid dividends in other areas. Now, that's all great, but how does it ride? Now, I'll tell you one thing. It is very, very difficult to get a pickup truck to have load capacity and to ride well. Okay? Two different masters, two different demands, two different spring rates, what have you. All right, so very, very, very hard. But I can tell you, once again, hats off to Chevrolet, General Motors, is that the ride was extremely compliant, and compliant is different than smooth. It was smooth, but compliant meaning that it isolates you from most of the things on the road. So it was extremely compliant on a smooth road. Beautiful, gorgeous, quiet, wind noise and compliant. But you know what I've seen in so many other modern pickup trucks, that a good level of that compliance completely disappears with a series of quakes, shudders, and trembles when you hit, let's say, a patch of rough pavement on the highway, all right, or like a railroad track or what have you, is that it's usually what you would call high resolution, meaning many of them low frequency, meaning, let me get my thoughts, I'm messing this up. It's low resolution, meaning not a lot of height to the not a lot of variance in the road, but high frequency. So like a railroad track, or what you call on a dirt road, would be a washboard road, right? So the bumps and the irregularities in the road are not very high. It's not like it's a big pothole or a chuck hole, but it's high frequency. They're very close to one another, all right? So the tire is constantly going up and down. And so I've seen that in a lot of new trucks. I've seen that in a lot of trucks, is that their compliance is very beautiful on the compliance there. Ride is beautifully, very compliant on a smooth road. You get into these high frequency, low resolution sections, and the whole thing seems to quake and shudder and just do a whole bunch, tremble over everything. And as an engineer, I recognize that, you know, it's tough to balance load capacity and unladen ride quality. But, you know, I was a little bit prejudiced towards this truck as far as that's concerned, because of my prejudice, I feel, was amplified because the test vehicle was $61,000 on the window sticker, and it was intended as a personal use pickup truck. So I would have been more forgiving if it was a base Chevy work truck. All right, but at a, you know, $61,000 truck, and, you know, sadly, and that was one of the reasons I said in the beginning, you know, can this truck work like a farm truck? There's a lot of people who buy these trucks and won't put anything more than two bags of fertilizer from Home Depot in the back. And if you had this truck and you're going over a washboard road or going into an urban environment where the road is rough, you're taking somebody in your $60,000 pickup truck and it's quivering and shaking and doing everything. But as I said again, we'll repeat, it's not something that was particular just to the General Motors line, but I did expect a little bit more isolation or dampening of that in a rougher road situation. But now, you know, breaking away from this for a minute, that I have found, and this is empirical, and if somebody's listening to this and you're a spring engineer, or you're a guy who does ride and handling for car manufacturer or Chevrolet listens to this, is that I have found with all brand pickup trucks, I'm going to get back to my old Ranger for a minute. Bought my Ranger new in 2002. As soon as I got it, I loaded it. I mean, I worked it. So, I mean, I didn't load it just to load it. I put 2,000 pounds of fertilizer in the back. Did this. It was many times it was loaded right from the get-go. I'm not 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but I worked it as a farm truck. And people would get in my Ranger. They go, oh, my God, this thing, I can't believe it. And it was a base cheap Ranger, the XL. It's got the vinyl seat, 5-speed manual transmission, no air conditioning, short bed. And they said, boy, this thing, I can't believe how good this thing rides. I can't believe how good this thing rides. Well, I am well convinced, and this road test of the Silverado proved it to me, is that the quakes and shudders and things that I was complaining about were reduced, I'd say, by about 40 or 50%. After I took the first load of fertilizer back from the mill in Maryland. And my theory, and this may be 100% wrong, it's an empirical theory. My theory is that these trucks need to be loaded to break the springs in. And if you think about it, you know, if you go if you break your arm, or God forbid, break your leg, and then you have physical therapy, what they want to do is that they go to physical therapy, they want to restore your range of motion, right? So you could lift your arm up all the way, you could lift it all the way, or your leg, or what have you, a range of motion. And I am a firm believer after this that the springs in these trucks need to be able to extend their range of motion by being loaded and unloaded in a true work environment. That's 100 pounds of fertilizer from Home Depot and grass seed in the back. And I think that I'm going to use the term loosely, breaks in the springs. But when I went, remember, with the tote empty to Maryland, loaded it up, brought it all the way back, pumped it off, the next morning went back again. So the same empty tote, the same route. And I'm getting on Route 80, going over the same bumps. I say, boy, this thing is more compliant now. And then, so I was thinking about that. So my advice to you is, even if you buy a truck, I don't care what brand, and you're using it as a car, you're buying it for your wife, you're buying it to whatever, to go to meetings, you're not really working it, I would suggest a couple of times when it's brand new, load it up, make it carry a load, put 1,500, 2,000 pounds in the back of it, and not, don't just go, you know, 5 miles with it, and use that truck, because I am well convinced, I repeat it, that you will see a great improvement in the ride quality with it unloaded afterwards, even if you never put a load in it again. All right, your wife uses it, the most heaviest thing she puts is a shopping bag in it. But if you break those springs in and you give them that full range of motion, I think that you will enjoy a much better ride quality. And I think that's why people thought, couldn't believe how my Ranger rode, because I loaded it so much. All right, so get back to this truck here. But, you know, let's talk about the engine. The 5.3 V8 and the 10-speed automatic transmission, I can only use one word to describe them. Outstanding. All right, you know, I'm a calibration guy, so I am a stickler. I'm a pain in the neck. I'm a stickler for drivetrain performance. No excuses. A calibration has to be no excuses. That no excuses. All right, and I'm a stickler for that, and I'm a stickler for smoothness, throttle response, idle quality, and all the attributes that make a calibration. That's like saying a picket fence stand of corn. All right. And try as I may, because of the stickler in me, I could not critique one aspect of that combination. That transmission was always in the right gear. That engine was always right there. The idle quality was beautiful. It's a very quiet engine. It's, you know, I would say up until this new Ford 7.3 coming out, arguably, without doubt, it's the most advanced push rod engine in the world. And the people who did that calibration at General Motors, I am saluting you. You can't see it because it's a podcast, but I am saluting you. That thing did nothing wrong. And as Mr. Lee said, as far as the calibration being visible, when you have a calibration on something, the idea for it to be invisible, and what we mean by invisible is that the person driving it, the consumer, the client, has no idea what it's doing, has no idea whether it's in 4 cylinders, 8 cylinders, whether it's in 10-speed, 9-speed, no idea. Completely ignorant to it, because it doesn't talk to you. It's so seamless. And that's how that truck was. If I didn't even see the tack drop, I wouldn't know the transmission shifted. So, and tell you the truth, I'm embarrassed to say, I had no idea how many cylinders were running. Not a clue, all right? Not a clue. That's how invisible it was. And kudos, I mean, I'm saluting you, because that is a remarkable, and it makes me proud as an American citizen, that this truck has got such a perfect, dead nuts on calibration. Gorgeous. Gorgeous. Now, that calibration, that transmission, that torque converter, that dynamic fuel management system, and those aerodynamics all worked in concert, because it's like a symphony. And that truck delivered 27.1 miles per gallon on the way down to Maryland at a legal speed limit of 65 miles per hour with the tote hanging in the wind in the back. So, you know, it was unbelievable, beautiful. And I bet you on a less hilly road, I could have eked that easily 28 miles per gallon, and it was cold out, so that means the air was denser, right? But anyway, 27.1 documented going down to Maryland, crew cab, four-wheel drive, heavy, heavy truck, high country, moonroof, everything in it. Fantastic. One that loved that drivetrain. But, you know, but at that particular point, it's okay, the drivetrain is great, but what about the rest of the truck, right? It rides, nice aerodynamics, but could it take this load? Could it take 265 gallons of agro liquid fertilizer, or is the thing going to be dragging a bumper underground? So who knows? But when I got to Maryland, that I definitely had those reservations. So what I basically did is, when I pulled into the Mills facility, Tim Hushin greeted me. He's one of the owner's son, real good guy. And I was interested in the truck because he wants to buy a new truck. So what I did is I backed into their filling station, and we decided what we were going to do is that we were going to take the 9-way planter mix first. Made no difference. I'm going back the next day. I said, which one do you want to mix? He said, let's do this one first. It was a crapshoot which way. So he was into. So with the Chevy backed into the bay there, Tim set the the mixing station, whatever you would call it, and they started to fill the tote with the 265 gallons worth of liquid fertilizer. And, you know, I was like, oh, man, is this thing going to be laying a bumper on the ground, or what's going to happen? So I'm very, very proud. My heart is full of pride, to tell you that the Silverado laughed at it. I mean, absolutely laughed at it. The body hardly moved. It did not care. It was like saying to me, farm boy, that's all you got is 265 gallons here? This is a Chevrolet. What are you doing? I mean, it didn't care. It did not care whatsoever. I mean, yeah, it sunk slightly in the back, but the stance of the vehicle, if you looked at it sideways, you'd never know it had 265 gallons worth of fertilizer in it. And that, to me, is the hallmark of a real farm truck. And I'm not going to name any names, but there are some trucks out there. There are some trucks out there that in the half-ton capacity would be not doing that. All right, let's leave it at that. So as far as loading this thing is concerned, don't worry about it. This thing eats that up like nothing. Like I said, it laughed at it. But then at that particular point, that's fine. I said to myself, that's great, okay. The bumper's not on the ground. The thing didn't bust in half. All right, so, but how is it going to handle on the road? Is it going to handle on the road well with that weight in it? Is it going to be light in the front? Because it was 10 gallons shy of full, so it's going to be sloshing around. Is it going to be thrown? So we'll see. So leaving the mill back out in the road, the Chevy Silverado did not disappoint. The chassis handled the load as if it were a week's worth of groceries. The little 5.3, all right, you know, coming back loaded, now same route, right, same route, pulled the mountains as if the truck were empty. Unbelievable. And never once did I see, based upon the tachometer, I paid a lot of attention when I was driving. Of course, when I drive these vehicles to test them for you, my audience, I'm not listening to the radio. I'm not doing all this stuff. I'm paying attention to the drivetrain, the way it's handling, what's the transmission doing, what have you. And like I said, that's my background, so I love doing that. I never saw it once come out of 10th gear. With that load in the back, climbing those hills, 65 miles per hour, and never saw it come out of 10th gear, see the tack. So I'd climb a hill, especially a long grade, and I'd watch the tack to see where the tack was, to see whether she'd drop a gear or two. Never dropped. Had no idea how many cylinders was in it. Was it running on? Could have been running on 4 or 6. I have no idea what it was running on. It just flattened those hills. And even with the load in the back and with 87 octane E10 in the tank, that load, it delivered 26 miles, a good solid 26 miles per gallon. And the DFM, the dynamic fuel management, was totally, totally imperceptible. So what I like to say, I'm going to use an engineering term to describe this drivetrain. It is a honey. It is a sweetheart. Unbelievable. Absolutely love it. So the chassis of the truck handled the load like it was a week's worth of groceries. The tie downs in the bed, the 12 tie downs made it seem like it was very easy and quick to tie everything down. The ride quality, right, unladen, was very good, except that the issues that I said. And then once I broke the springs in, I'm using that term, it actually even rode better empty. But that engine, that you don't need the 6.2. There's nothing that you're going to be able to do with this truck that you need the 6.2. I mean, unless you just want to buy cubic inches. My only regret is that if I were the General Motors engineers, I would have played with the bore and stroke number slightly, or just fudge them slightly. So when I did the math, it came out as a 327 instead of a 325 cubic inches. That would have been so sweet. And I would have put a 320. If I bought that truck, I'd buy a 327 old Chevy bow tie cross flags V emblem to put on each front fender. And they should have called it a 327, because this engine is unbelievable. This 10-speed transmission that they share with Ford, the basic design of it, the DNA, each buddy's calibration and torque converter is different, is unbelievable. The drivetrain on that truck is unbelievable. Its ability to work as a farm truck is unbelievable. And if anything, it did not get citified, right? It got more farmified, because that truck could work work, 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 work. And then basically whatever I threw at it, 1,100 miles, over 1,100 miles loaded in 2 days, it basically laughed at it. So let's start to bring this show to an end. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you what I liked about the truck. Excellent drivetrain. Seamless integration of advanced engine control logic. And, you know, you may not realize, because if it's like anything, you know, somebody who doesn't farm doesn't, well, you throw some seed in the ground the guy from Goldberg, whatever his name was, running for president, the guy from Bloomberg, say, hey, you throw some seed in the ground, you get a crop, right? The hours and hours and hours that went into, thousands of hours, I'd say, that went into that calibration and developing that engine controller and that calibration is unbelievable. It's seamless. It's perfect. It's gorgeous. I love it. It had, the truck also had an acceptable service and maintenance access to the engine. I mean, all of these trucks, because the bodies are high and the engine sits down low in the frame and not like it was in 1972, but really the Chevy was quite serviceable from what I could see to check the oil, reach in there, do certain things. So that's a big plus today, because a lot of these things, you open the hood, you can't even see anything. All right. The aerodynamics in the quiet cabin, wonderful. Great job. These are the things I like. The superb build quality. Roanoke, Indiana plant, Fort Wayne. You guys and gals really put this truck together, and I know each one is going to come off the line with the same level of quality. Fantastic. True farm use payload capacity, and that's important, because you look at some of these trucks, they may say they ride better, they do this, but they're not designed for anything more than a couple of bags of fertilizer from Home Depot or the garden center. All right, so this thing, I loaded this thing and it laughed at me, and I'm repeating, and fuel economy, wonderful, wonderful fuel economy, all right, 27.1 miles per gallon, you know, with truck with only 1,900, 2,000 miles, my pickup not fully broken in, fantastic, excellent, all right? What I did not like was nothing in life is perfect other than the good Lord that was nailed to the cross. It's hard to judge where all the areas of the body are. It takes a little bit getting used to. If you're pulling into a barn, you're pulling next to a piece of machinery, backing into something, all right, hard to judge. You do get used to it, but like I say, you'll be getting out of that vehicle a lot in the beginning, all right? The high load lift height, which I discussed ad nauseum, not just at General Motors. You know, I don't need a truck that's sky high and you're giving me no more ground clearance. I want to be able to lift something, but I want to lift bags of corn seed in there and not have to get a step stool for it, right? All right. The dashboard was, to me, too busy, too complicated, too many little icons and buttons and what have you. Granted, it was a high country, but I'm sure a lot of those components would still probably be in a lesser model. But the owner's manual is 498 pages. So, I mean, and it's all for that onboard electronics, and I don't know whether it'd be the same owner's manual for a work truck version, but at 498 pages for an owner's manual, the fact of the matter is nobody's going to read that, nobody's going to understand it. Excuse me. I mean, that's like the New York City phone book, 409. I couldn't believe it. I picked this thing up. It was like, how many pages is this? I'm looking back, 498 pages. Okay, so we have what I liked, what I didn't like, and then what I nitpicked, all right? So what I nitpicked was the jittery ride unloaded low resolution, high frequency bumps. I did say that it got much better, or it got better, I should say, after broke the springs in. I felt, my personal opinion, that the interior materials, what the interior parts, the leather on the seats, the plastics on the dashboard, though very well put together, no denying that, high quality build, right, that the materials looked cheap. I mean, it's a $61,000 truck, and compared to like a $61,000 F-150 or something like that, is that it the interior to me looked cheap. I mean, I actually think the base truck looked better, all right? And then I also, as much as I love the DFM system, the dynamic fuel management with the collapsing, the valve lifters and what have you, is that I feel, and I may be wrong, but I tend to think that I am not wrong, is that it's going to be very unforgiving of someone that's not good with changing oil. So I feel that the DFM system will be very maintenance sensitive due to its complexity of collapsing and re-expanding those 16 valve lifters and all the solenoids. What I can say to you is that I would not be afraid to buy it, by no means. But I would say to you is that I would use a high quality synthetic oil. I believe it's the Dexos oil that GM wants in that. Just use what GM tells you in that. Change the oil, all right? Change the oil on a good schedule. If you do a lot of around town stuff, I mean around town meaning around the farm, short trip, maybe every 3,000 miles forth, you're doing more of a normal driving cycle, 5,000 miles or whatever. Change the oil, use a good oil, and I wouldn't be overly concerned with it. But I do feel that that system with its mechanical, electromechanical complexity is not going to be forgiving of somebody who doesn't change the oil or uses cheap oil, all right? So that's what I nitpicked about the truck. As we get ready to close here, I just want to say one thing, and I'm saying this to my audience and to Chevrolet. A few years back, I know that the Chevrolet pickup truck celebrated its 100th birthday, that they've been building pickup trucks for 100 years. You know, I put over 1,100 miles on this Silverado, the 2020 Silverado, in a farm work setting, not, you know, going to town to the grocery store in two days. And, you know, all I could say is if the good Lord does not return before then, there will be 2120 Chevy pickup trucks working alongside America's farmers and ranchers. And there is no higher compliment that I could be paid. So as I close, I want to thank you for listening. And I hope that you enjoyed the Road Test Podcast. If you have any questions about this truck, there is a article under the Getting to Know series under the Learn tab on my website with pictures that shows everything. And please contact me if you have any other questions about it at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. So before I get ready to close, I want to thank you all for listening. And I need to say once more, well done, Chevrolet. Well done. Take a bow because you deserve it. You guys have a blessed, blessed day. And I will see you on the next road test.